you could like feel, it was like a sneeze. You know when you lose a sneeze? It was like that. Like you could feel it coming, and it was like, I'm gonna sneeze, like I'm gonna have it in this place, and then like you lose it. Welcome to episode 9 of the RVA Ram News VCU Basketball Podcast. I'm Ross Catro.
I'm Aaron Williams.
And today we're recording from 9 stories above Richmond in Aaron's apartment with a beautiful view of maybe not so beautiful Richmond. It's kind of cloudy and it's supposed to snow. Everything's canceled and everything's closed, but we're still here.
The podcast must go on.
It must. So today we're going to look back, probably, hopefully briefly about the George Washington game. We'll obviously talk about Duquesne, do some trivia, look at Dayton, maybe look a little bit at LaSalle, and a couple other things thrown in. I think we should just rip the Band-Aid off and get right to George Washington, and we don't have to dwell on it, but we should probably talk about it.
First thing you notice watching the game, I think, is that George Washington was highly motivated, both on the court and in the stands. I mean, look at the environment and... That's not common for George Washington. I think they circled this one on the date, both because they have a very good team this year and because of what VCU did to them last year.
It seemed loud. Is that an environment known for being...
No, I think it's kind of cool. It's unfortunate that VCU lost, but I think for their fan base, this was a really big arrival point, you know, and also for the D.C. area. You know, Georgetown's having a tougher year. It's getting tougher and tougher for them every day, it seems. George Mason's having a terrible year. You know, the Redskins underperformed. I think people are really latching on to it.
Yeah.
There, especially, I mean, that fan base, they haven't experienced very much success. So you could tell they were pumped up. They circled it on the calendar, and unfortunately, I think in a lot of ways they just outplayed the Rams. I mean, you look at I've got to try his name here, Patricio Guarino. That's not that hard. he was playing like a maniac. I feel like on the energy and effort scale, he outplayed Breonte Weber and Terrence Shannon, which you don't really see every day.
Can you talk a little bit about the defense that George Washington used?
Yeah, so they played a lot of 1-3-1 zone defense, and with Guarino at the top of it, he's known as a great defender. He's a guard, but he's 6'6", really long and athletic, and he was just wreaking havoc to VCU.
Yeah.
You know, in most offenses, you know, one of the first passes is like, you know, maybe from the point guard to the shooting guard, you know, just getting things happening up there at the top of the key. A lot of offenses start with that, and this defense, you stick that guy up in there and you eliminate that. You know,
yeah.
VCU's doesn't have the most creative offense. It's a lot of ball screens and stuff like that, and just working the ball around the perimeter. And they couldn't do that, and I thought they really looked lost in the half court a lot of the game. And then on the other side of the ball, Guarino, he scored 25 points and really efficiently, and, you know, a lot of stuff in the fast break. He's not a good three-point shooter. He comes out and he hits 2 of his 3 3-point attempts.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I think he had something like 10 on the season, maybe. Just so, I think he was the most highly rated guy on a very highly motivated team, and he got the player of the game, and Kevin Larson, I think, had 17 or 19 first-half points, you know, also had a great performance. You know, it's not often that a player who scores that many points in the first half so dominantly gets outplayed by one of his own teammates.
Yeah.
And it was scary. I mean, on the other side of the ball, I mean, VCU struggled to score. I mean, 14 turnovers is too much.
I think there could have been easily 50% more turnovers. Especially, like you were saying, those passes at the top of the key, mm-hmm. There were a bunch of them that were nearly intercepted by that guy up there, and Rams were just lucky that they weren't.
Yeah, I agree with that entirely. You know, the sort of the lone bright spot for me is that Rob Brandenburg continued his great play. I mean, he's really become consistent and has done things in the past 6 or 7 games, especially consistency-wise, that he has not done. He's never done in his career, because that's something he struggled with. So he finished with 17 points, 3 of 6 three-point shooting, 4 of 6 two-point shooting, 3 steals. I mean, that's a really good stat line for someone, you know, who is inconsistently shooting like him.
Yeah.
But, you know, circle the date. They play each other again in the Siegel Center. Unfortunately, you know, George Washington found out today that I think their second leading scorer, Keaton Savage, is out for 6 to 8 weeks with a fracture in his foot.
I said, why couldn't that have happened earlier, which is terrible of me. And you were like, well, he didn't have a ton of points against VCU.
Well, that's the interesting thing coming into this game. They have two great scoring guards, and Keaton Savage and Indiana transfer Maurice Creek, and they finished with a combined 8 points on, I gotta do 04, 3 of 11 shooting, with 10 turnovers between the two of them. So they were their two statistically best players were non-factors, which kind of makes the rematch even that much scarier, because then those guys could come back with a vengeance, and the guys who did well come back energized. But I think VCU is going to win the rematch in the Siegel Center.
Did we expect a game like that from Patricio Guarino? Is that the place he normally plays on that defense? Like,
yeah, well, I mean, George Washington's had a lot of success this year, and Guarino missed 7 games already this season to injury.
Okay.
And so this is his longest stretch of playing so far. So, I mean, you look at all the great things they did. They had that really big win over Creighton. You know, they've had a couple of close losses that they still looked really, really impressive. You know, George Washington is like the big surprise this year in the A-10. And that's without Guarino playing like a maniac. I mean, if he comes in, he offers him such a great defender.
Yeah.
You know, now he's scoring the basketball. He don't even need to do that if he's just a marginal contributor. They're an even better team, and they're going to cause some people some problems.
Yeah, it's the thing I like about the A-10. I feel like there's always a surprising team that's kind of coming out of nowhere to be kind of a force. It was fun last year to watch that.
Yeah.
And I think this year there's already some of that.
Yeah, well, it's really interesting because you have a couple teams that people, you know, thought were going to be better that are a lot better, and then you had a couple teams that people thought were going to be better or at least decent, and they've been terrible. I mean, a lot of people thought Rhode Island had a lot of good recruits coming in. Dan Hurley's a very, very good coach, and they've really underperformed. And then Mason, I mean,
yeah,
they're struggling. It's getting a little painful to watch at this point. You know, and I think Chris Crawley in the CPR said that he doesn't think they're going to win a game till senior day. So
yeah,
we'll see. It'll be interesting to see how it shakes out, because I think there are a lot of teams that could finish between. I mean, there's a lot of teams that could finish in the first 8 or 9 spots. It could go anyway.
Yeah. And it was kind of like that last year, too, wasn't it? Didn't a lot of... Maybe not in the 8 or 9, but towards the middle of the pack, there was that chunk.
Yeah. I mean, VCU and St. Louis, they were pretty solid at the top, but then it was madness. I mean, Butler was a 5 seed in the tournament last year, and, you know, look at what they did. I mean, they were close to...
Yeah.
They're basically a player or two away from going to Sweet 16. You know, it's really interesting, people, not to get too off on this, but I mean, people thought that with the loss of Temple, Butler, Charlotte,
yeah,
and what's the one I'm missing? It's another good team.
Can't remember.
Okay, well, it's not that important. I mean, the point is, people thought, I mean, A-10's losing a lot. Oh, Xavier.
Yeah.
You know, losing, I mean, Temple and Xavier are,
yeah,
you know, probably the biggest name programs in the A-10. People thought it was going to be a huge drop-off. Well, Temple's having a terrible season. Xavier's okay. Butler's having a pretty rough season compared to what they're used to. And then all of a sudden, all these teams that used to be, you know, middle of the way contributors are having their best seasons ever. So, I mean,
I think UMass is 13.
Right, yeah.
13 now.
UMass and SLU and George Washington and, you know, St. Joseph's is really turning on. They had 17 three-pointers against Decade.
Wow.
And they've had similar shooting numbers recently. So it's exciting. It's a little nerve-wracking, though, for Ram fans who are accustomed to second-place finishes in conferences, like what's happened the past 2 years. So, a lot of things to look at, and hopefully the Rams are learning some things, especially on the offensive end from that game. You know, you move on, you expect them to come out a little bit stronger against UK in the first half. They don't, but then the second half we start seeing the offense that we want to see for the Rams.
So that's a good transition. Let's talk about that Duquesne game. I was there, my child, and I think this has pretty much happened almost every single game for VCU that I haven't watched in its entirety that I watched up until maybe like 12 minutes remaining in the second half, and then I left, and then all the things happened. Like,
wait,
all,
what did you leave
early? Oh yeah, I left early because I had a toddler with me. He's not really a toddler now; he's 5 years old, but he had his fill.
Yeah.
Of basketball, and like it kind of it seemed like, oh man, like BC is probably gonna win this. They're starting to pull away, but it's like boring. And like
then the dunks and three pointers started.
Yeah,
happening.
Didn't see the dunks. Didn't see the three pointers. I didn't see anything that was awesome.
Well,
that's happened to me multiple times this season.
Maybe here's a new strategy. If you're gonna go to a VC Rams game, all of their games seem like they're 4 points or less at the half. We'll update the table and put it on the podcast page. So maybe come with 5 minutes left in the first half.
That's a great idea.
And watch the second half.
Yeah.
Because you know, the Rams, outside of the Virginia Tech game, not too many of the first halves have been extremely memorable.
Yes.
Second half here, though, you know, they had that one stretch where they scored 17 points in, I think, 3 minutes and 5 seconds. They really got it going. But, you know, it's a little nerve-wracking. I mean, Duquesne's not a good team, especially they're probably the worst defensive team in the Atlantic 10. And the Rams did not do a great job scoring on them in the first half.
Yeah.
They're very good on offense, but, you know, that's what VCU needs. I'm not worried about VCU's defense. I'm not. They rank 7th in the nation for adjusted defensive efficiency. You know, people complain, oh, they allow too many, like, easy two-pointers. That's always been the case. They play a very high-risk defensive system. But they need to get the offense going. And earlier than in the second half against a team like Duquesne.
Yeah.
But, you know, they have a couple of really, really big-time memorable plays. There's the Terrence Shannon...
the put-back dunk.
Trapeze act put-back dunk. That's just ridiculous. I've never seen anything quite like that. You know, and that got people pretty pumped up, you know, and then the team sort of ran out to midcourt, and the referees had to come over and sort of corral them in. But then I think from that gave them a lot of momentum, and then Melvin Johnson hit those two three-pointers, back-to-back three-pointers, and the Rams were off. And I think from there, you know, there must have been four dominant dunks. Bronte Weber scored 7 straight points.
Yeah.
You know, so that's what they need, but I think they need to do it earlier, and they need... You know, they should not struggle to score against a team like Duquesne. But, you know, they're playing some zone defense, so the Rams haven't been great against the zone this year.
Yeah, we got to find an answer to that. And it seems like there are answers for it once they get going. Like you're saying, like, all it takes is that spark, and everyone in the whole place can feel it. Like, there were times in the first half where, like, you could, like, it was like a sneeze. You know when you lose a sneeze? It was like that. Like, you could feel it coming, and it's like, I'm going to sneeze, and, like, I'm going to have it in this place. And then, like, you lose it because of, like, they would come back and answer. You know, Duquesne would come back and answer something that VCU had done. Or VCU would, you know, like, there are a couple of those times. And this has happened in a couple of the games in the past, too, where, like, someone shoots the three that'll do it. Like, that'll...
Yeah.
And it's like, the three's in the air, and everyone's like, oh, it's going to blow up. And then it, like...
Bang, yeah,
like, bounce off the rim, and
but the cool thing about VCU is they try to maximize those opportunities.
Yeah,
that's why. I mean, my dad and I used to text about this when Joey Rodriguez was on the team, and I'd be watching the game, and Joey would force up on those 3-pointers.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad would text me like, "Classic Joey," but I always try to explain to him, it's like that three's not about the points.
Yeah,
it's just about VCU needs to get going now.
Yes,
and Joey Rodriguez being like the veteran leader, the emotional leader of that team, would I think he would just kind of force one up there because he knew all it would take is that one shot to go in, you know. And so he forced one up and wouldn't go in, then he forced another one up and wouldn't go in, but that third one go in, and then next thing you know, VCU's on a 15-2 run to take the lead or to put the game out of reach or at least get back competitive in the game. So I think they're a team, it's all about momentum for them.
Totally, momentum, if you believe in momentum.
Some
people don't believe in sports momentum.
So, I mean, there's momentum within the game, and there's momentum for the season.
Yeah.
And I think when we preview these next two games, it's scary. It's scary.
It almost feels how the momentum in individual games has been lacking for the first half and then picks up in the second half. I feel like we're at a point, that kind of point in the season where, like, every time the Rams pick up a win, and then, not every time, but, like, recently the Rams pick up a win, you think it's, like, the head of steam is built, and then they drop a game like Northern Iowa, they drop a game like George Washington. And these two next road games against LaSalle and
Dayton
are a big deal. I think it would be a big deal to come out 2-0, I think, from these two road
games. Absolutely.
That would be a huge, huge deal.
And when we preview teams, I may not think that happens. But so what we agree upon now is the metaphor for the VCU basketball season and for their games is losing a sneeze.
Yeah.
You heard it here first. I'll say one last thing maybe about the Duquesne game. So, I mean, Duquesne scored 65 points. 27 of those were in the last 10 minutes. VCU did a really, really good job of shutting them down. Ovi Soko, who's averaging 17.5 points, finished with 7-0-5 field goals, shooting and 4 turnovers. Micah Mason, who had the number one offensive rating in the country on KenPom.com, great, great, maybe the best 3-point shooter in the conference. He's played 11 games this season, 10 of them. He's made more than half of his attempts. finished 0-4 from three-point range with two turnovers. So, I mean, two of the best players were just entirely non-factors.
And he almost posted a trillion, that guy. He had a rebound.
Micah Mason.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, he's not the kind of guy... Well, that would have been a 17 trillion.
Yeah. I mean, that's a long time to play to pick up one rebound and two turnovers and a foul.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's kind of his thing, though, is he's an Allen Wrench player. Yeah. He does one thing very, very well, which sometimes can be really deadly. But when he's not making shots, he doesn't affect the game. And I think that's one of Duquesne's problems, is that he's one of their taller guards. But, I mean, Derek Coulter's 5'11", Trayvon White is 5'10". You know, and that's why they have to play all this zone defense. They're just getting killed because their guards are undersized. And Mason's 6'2", 180.
Yeah.
So that's I would have loved to have seen VCU's guards take them off the bounce more. But it didn't happen. But 15-point win, you know, you can only complain but so much.
Before we move on to trivia, do you... I wanted to say one player's name out loud, Terrence Shannon. I thought he, again, was the... Like, there, he was kind of... Not that he was invisible in George Washington, but there was no Terrence Shannon moment that, like, there has been. And there, I mean, there's, like, a couple of Terrence Shannon moments against Duquesne. So I just wanted to give him some accolades for just, again, kind of providing that,
that
spark off the bench, you know?
He's a 6'8", 240-pound guy, and he blocked 2 3-pointers, you know? And he was just going at it. He makes those plays that... They aren't Melvin Johnson flashy scoring plays. They're not even, you know, like the dramatic, gaudy like number of steals that Bronto ever has. But he just like makes those junkyard dog plays.
Yeah.
That's, you know, that's what Coach Smart wants his big men to be, junkyard dogs. And I think he's, gosh, I wish if he could, some of that could like rub off on Javonte Redick and even like Mo Alley Cox, just like get that little bit more amount of fire. I think it would really help everyone. And after the game, I mean, all three of those guys are really good, and they bring different things to the game. I think that, I mean, Redick is clearly a more skilled player. Alec Cox, I think, has the potential to have more skill, but he's earning minutes and making plays, and it's kind of interesting. After the game, Coach Smart called him a three-headed, 750-pound animal monster. So it's an interesting way of thinking about it. But yeah, he's fun to watch, and people pick up on it.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't score a lot of points or anything like that, but, like, it's cool that the Stew picks up on that, and they always give him a standing ovation.
Yep.
I feel like he's gotten a standing ovation maybe the last three home games, so hopefully that continues. And hopefully, you know, the arc of his season, if a couple other people have that kind of arc, if Jordan Burgess really turns it on, or if Jaquan Lewis, you know, he's having a little, he's facing some adversity now, maybe if he can turn it on, yeah, the Rams will be that much better for it.
That's a... kind of a good transition. Let's do trivia.
Okay.
It's not a great transition.
I've been studying my city, the U.S. capitals, and
good.
I busted out the atlas.
You know, there are no geography-related trivia this week.
Bummer.
I know. All that studying was for nothing. All right, question number one. Who is the last player to notch a double-double for the Rams?
Trayvon Graham.
It was Trayvon Graham. Do you remember when?
He had 10 rebounds. It wasn't Duquesne, was it George Washington?
It was Mason. He had 10 rebounds and 15 points against Mason.
Okay.
So that
I mean,
was...
Redick's had a couple of double-digit rebounding games, but he's not made it in points.
All right, great segue to question number two. When was the last time Javonte Redick had a double-double?
Stenbrook?
Nope.
Yeah. It's before 8-10 play. He hasn't had one in 8-10, has he? Earlier than that. Oh, man. That would have been, it was probably before Tech. It was, what is it?
It was Virginia Tech.
Ah.
He had 10 points, 11 rebounds.
Okay.
At Virginia Tech. He's had a couple this year. ODU, he had 24 points and 12 rebounds. Belmont,
he went off in that game.
Yeah. Belmont, he had 18 points and 11 rebounds. Northeastern, 17 points, 10 rebounds. Long Beach State, 17 points, 10 rebounds. A common theme throughout is when Javonte Redick has a double-double, the Rams do not lose the basketball game.
Yeah, well, go figure.
So I thought that was interesting.
I'll say, can I have
please,
60 seconds for Javonte Redick?
Yeah.
So I was looking at, I think there are two ways to judge a season. I think a lot of people are upset. Twitter, definitely.
That wasn't meant to be negative either. Let me
say,
that was just, I was looking through stats and I thought that was interesting because I felt like he's improved a little bit. And
I think if you look at it statistically, he's better in almost every single number except for like free throw shooting.
Yeah.
I mean, he's still shooting like 57% from the field now. If you, the only, I think there are only two statistical areas you can really be upset with him, and that is like volume of shots and free throw shooting, which I don't understand.
Yeah.
I don't understand how you're, but he's always been between 65 and 70%, and right now he's in the 40s.
It's clearly a, like, it's clearly a mental thing, because some of his shots are just like horrible.
Oh yeah,
they're like insanely horrible, and you can just tell they come out weird. He looks weird doing it. It's like,
yeah, it's something, which is weird because he's a, I mean, he's a good shooter. I mean,
yeah,
he hits that 17 footer more often than not. So then you got to judge it from like the other area, and that's like body language and stuff like that. And clearly that stuff's off. I think it'd be interesting. I don't know. It'd be interesting to get a real answer from him. But he kind of dodges the question every single time he gets hit. Understandably so. But I don't know if it's like because he's playing basically for millions of dollars in his future or what it is. But I think I say this because his rebounding numbers actually are way more impressive than they even were last year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he's he had 14 the other night, he had 10 the other night, and he's having a great rebounding season. So
and
let's take it easy on Javante.
Yeah, yeah. And like you said about what Coach said about the three-headed beast of doom or whatever. It's hard to imagine that when Terrence Shannon is playing as well as he is, and like even as energetic as he is, that doesn't get all those big dudes excited. You know?
Yeah.
That can only help, I think.
No, I agree. I think, I definitely agree. And I mean, you saw it the other night because Shannon hits that dunk, you know, and then Ali Cox has a dunk in that second half. Jared Guest has a big offensive rebound for a dunk.
Yeah.
You know, I think Javante Redick had a dunk. I mean, every single one of their big men had a dunk.
Right.
After that Terrence Shannon dunk. So, I think there's some validity to that.
All right, question number three. This is a weird one. VCU's record away from the Stew, including, so that's neutral site and away, true away, is 55%. They're 2-2 in true road games and 3-2 in neutral games.
Okay.
Neutral site games. This is hard. When was the last time the Rams finished the season with a worse winning percentage outside of the Siegel Center? They're at 55% right now.
Is it prior to 2011?
Okay. Sorry? it's prior to 2011. 2003. It was 2009, 2010. When they played, yeah, and this is weird. This might be a lie. Like I was looking, and I don't think they played a neutral site game in 2009, 2010. That's when they played St. Louis.
Yeah, they played in the CBI,
and
a lot of those games were. Well, they played George.
Well, because CBI is
just in the finals,
and so they were 8-8 in away games in 2009, 2010.
Really?
Yeah. So, and just looking back to 2009, 2010, they're 55% now with. 7 remaining away games in the regular season. They were 63% in 2012-2013, 73%, which is kind of crazy, in 2011-2012. And then...
They didn't play a lot of good teams on the road, though. Or outside the Seals Center.
And then 65% in 2010-2011. And then just a side note, KenPom has VCU winning 4 of the remaining 7 away games. And only...
That's pretty generous.
And only... Well, the follow-up to that is that he only has Fordham with a confidence of 55% or greater. So all those games are real, real tight.
Yeah.
Basically toss-ups in most of the away games VCU plays.
I think this year... I don't know that it's a road problem. You know, you've talked about this in the past. Are they really that much worse... on the road than they are at home, and I just think it's because they've played tougher teams.
Yeah.
And there's a great KenPom article that you can read about how, like, there really is no such thing as a home court advantage from 3 years ago. I'll see if I can hop that down. We can put it up.
Yeah, I would love to.
Because they've played really good. I mean, you know, Northern Iowa was, like, a little disappointing, but Florida State's good. Georgetown's a good team.
Yeah.
George Washington's clearly a really good team.
Fourth and final trivia question. How many career three-pointers does Briante Weber have? He has 23. He had 9 in 2011, 9 in 2012, and he's got 5 so far this year. Including, and he's 4-8 in the past.
Yeah.
2
Oh,
games.
Yeah. I should have mentioned that earlier in the recap.
Yeah.
People, yeah. That's...
And, like, we kind of talked about, like, we talked about early in the season where, like, man, would sure love to see Beyonce Weber stop just jacking up those threes. And but if he's going to shoot 4 of 8, yeah, maybe he can jack those threes up on everyone.
Well, I think he got down to 6% at one point.
Yeah,
he was 1 of 17. That's,
yeah,
that's.
I think he hit 1 in Illinois State or something.
Yeah, very early on, and was like, all right, yeah, and like good release, like hit it. You know, but he talked about the other night. I asked him a question about the 3-point shooting, and he said the coaching staff tells him, you know, like when he passes up those three, like when he passes up and up a 3-pointer, it hurts the team. You know, when he misses them, it also hurts the team.
Yeah.
But you know, it does hurt the team when he's not making them. And Chris Kowalczyk from around the horns, because he sits over there next to him, and said
on,
like
on the table.
Coach Smart said, like, after that first one he missed, he's like, I have no problem with that shot. You gotta get it off clean. You know, like, I think they've got no problem if he takes a couple of game. Just to you make them, and then you force the defender to respect you.
Yeah,
that's what you want.
And so it looks like he'll have, I mean, he's got 5 right now. And he probably will eclipse his season high this year.
He's also going to eclipse his season high for attempts.
Yeah.
But regression to me, I mean, if he can shoot 30% from 3-point range, you know, for what he's trying to do, that's, from here on out, he can hit 3 out of every 10 he takes, then it helps the team.
Definitely. So that was this week's trivia.
Okay.
That was pretty good. Do we want to talk about these upcoming games, Dayton?
Well, I've got my...
Oh, yeah.
What was it? Tangential 2, more like 10 minutes?
Yeah.
not good at naming things. But last week we talked about former VCU assistants.
That's right.
And their current head coaching jobs. I thought it'd be interesting to talk about VCU transfers and how they're doing at their current schools.
Yeah,
or,
definitely.
Or, you know, what they will do in the future.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the biggest name one is Rico.
Yep.
Rico McCarter. It was really interesting. I was reading an article about him, and they referred to the fact that he was, like, a fan favorite because of his dogs. Now there used to be Rico chants and stuff like that, but obviously he didn't get to play very much. He's having a really, really great season. He's turned it on recently. So let me see here. You know, the first 15 games or so, I think he scored in double figures 3 times. And he has in the last 6 games, including a 29-point performance against East Carolina. So, I mean, 29-14, 19-23, 14-21. He's got a different coach than last year, and I think his coach this year is a little bit more willing to use him and utilize him. And he's been posting really impressive numbers rebounding as well. So he had 13 in his last game, 9 before that, 8 before that. So, I mean, you know, And plenty of steals, obviously.
Yeah, it looks like he's averaging almost 5 a game.
5
rebounds.
Yeah, you know, he's 6'6", but he's got guard skills. But that's exciting for him. You know, I think you know, sometimes these things aren't always good stories, but you know, it's nice when it does work out well for a guy like Rico, because you know he had a lot of skills, but it didn't seem like he was going to be the kind of guy who could have a role like this at VCU.
Yeah. And I mean, Campbell is 9-10, but they're 3-1 in the Big South. So
that's how the typical arc of the Big South season is. You know, the Big South's really interesting. I mean, they've got that one loss to Liberty, and they're going to regret that one.
Yes.
But the Big South's an interesting conference this year. And you know, if you follow the CPR, you get some taste of that. You know, but there's some teams that can get hot and then lose really silly games. Radford's a good example of that. Liberty last year is a great example of that. You know, they stormed into the NCAA tournament after a pretty mediocre season. So,
and there's 4 teams at the top of the Big South right now, all with 3-1 records. It's Winthrop,
mm-hmm.
which VCU has played,
mm-hmm.
Campbell, Radford, and someone else? UNC something. UNC Asheville.
Yeah. So
it's competitive. That's cool. It's cool to see people having success over there. And last year, not to talk CPR forever, but last year, I feel like I was kind of into the MEAC a little bit.
Yeah.
But this year, I'm totally into the Big South. There's lots of stuff going on in the Big South that I'm a fan of.
Yeah, not so much in the MEAC.
Yeah.
Hampton and Norfolk State, who you referred to as last year's CPR darling.
Yeah.
They're having a struggling season. So so there's one other VCU transfer that's really currently playing D1. That's DJ Haley, a guy who had a much more successful career for VCU than Rico did. It's kind of nice. He's playing for Southern California,
yeah,
which is closer home for him. And You know, he's in graduate school now. And it's kind of cool. I mean, he's shooting 63% from the field. He's not hitting a lot of shots. And he's tons of rebounds. And he's really successful. And they were having a really good season. They actually beat Dayton, which we're going to talk about in a minute. But Pac-12 hasn't been too easy on them. They've lost five straight.
Wow.
But it's cool because he's like, you know, I get Google alerts all the time. You know, like big dunks that he has, or like
yeah.
He's a part of that team, and which is really interesting because I thought it was an interesting pickup. Because Dandy Enfield from Florida Gulf Coast is their coach,
mm-hmm.
and he plays like a really up tempo style, and DJ Hill is more of like a classic,
yeah.
not like a run in the four big man. He's like a 7-footer, takes him a minute to get up and down, but he still had a lot of success there, which I think is pretty cool.
Maybe if he's a classic big man at VCU, his speed is still like levels of, like above the like everybody else's classic big
yeah.
man, you know.
So Enfield, I guess, saw him last year when Florida Gulf Coast visited the Stu
yeah.
at the beginning of the season before they made it to the Sweet 16.
That was Breontae Weber had like a trillion steals that game, right?
He had 10 steals that game.
Yeah.
And so that's the perfect segue because I gotta pull this. Because the next team VCU plays is Dayton.
Yep.
And last year against Dayton, Breontae Weber had 9 steals, which is his second most, I think, in a game in his entire career.
He'll have a triple-double one time. You think so?
Man, he could get a quadruple-double if all the stars align. He's got enough games left in his career. He's going to get a triple-double. I'm pretty confident. Now I got to find my page here.
Does quadruple-double happen in college basketball? It sure happens in high school basketball a lot.
I don't know the last quadruple-double. It has to have happened. I mean,
yeah. Maybe that's a good
It'd be tough.
Question.
For big men, it's tough to get the assists.
Yeah.
For small guys, it's tough to get the rebounds or the blocks or, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
We got the Dayton here. Yeah, so it's an interesting game. Dayton's an interesting team. I think, the first A-10 game VCU ever played was against VCU last year, and VCU won 74-62, but it was a tough, grinded-out
yeah, uh-huh.
game, if you remember. I believe that was the check the stew game.
Yeah.
And VCU had trouble, I think, with their guards, which is what we saw a lot, have seen a lot over the past couple years. So their best player, Kevin Diller, senior, he graduated,
yeah.
but they bring back a team that's just really, really good on offense.
I was looking at their stats real quick before we started, and it looks like they've got some dudes who can shoot from range pretty effectively.
Yeah, that's the so for them, it's they've got a lot of really good quick guards, and then they put 4 to 5 guys on the court who can legitimately shoot the three. And you know, from the point guard, Kari Price, who's shooting 45%, Dashaun Pierre shooting 38%, Devin Oliver, who's probably their best player, shooting 38%, and then
yeah.
Jordan Seibert, who's a transfer from Ohio State, shooting 46% from threes. So they'll make you pay, especially, you know, if they break the press and they get some open looks, they will make you pay. And that's incredible balance, and that's kind of the story of their team. They don't really have anyone averaging more than 12 points per game,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, they've got, I think, 3 guys in double figures and a fourth who's right below there.
Yep.
So they'll make you pay, and the real story of this game is where it's played, and that's University of Dayton Arena, which is...
it's a beautiful arena.
It's one of my favorite arenas in the country. I've been there twice. I've seen 3 different games there. Well, 4 different games there. And, VC's played there, though, and VC's had some success there.
Yeah.
That's where they played USC in the first round, first four.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So this is their first time back there. But it's 13,000 people, and it's one of the best home courts in the country.
Mm-hmm.
They've got crazy basketball fans at Dayton.
Which you just said earlier, that you didn't believe that, or KenPom doesn't believe that exists. Home
well,
court.
I'm not saying I agree with him, or something that's interesting. I mean, I don't know. I mean, it can be good, it can be bad. I mean, Coach Smart has talked about this a lot recently, about how, like, you know, some guys... let me see it articulate. Some guys live to be the villain and go into those arenas and feed off energy and play better in those kinds of environments.
Yeah.
Joey Rodriguez.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he admitted to Coach Smart that he plays better in a fan full of a stadium full of opposing fans than he did in an empty stadium.
Yeah.
You know, I think this team has less guys like Joey Rodriguez and Brandon Marzell than in the past.
And I think Briante even said last week after the game that, like, the band is, like, a huge part. Wasn't that Briante Weber that said that?
Well, Jordan Burgess.
Was it Jordan Burgess?
Well, I think both of them. Jordan Burgess said it on the radio.
Okay.
I think Briante Weber probably said it in the media room.
And just how, like, the band is like, a huge part of getting the team going. Like, it's a spark.
So you could look at it two ways. It can be a good thing or a bad thing. I definitely think it's a different environment than what they're used to. An environment more in line with the George Washington game than maybe Puerto Rico. So I think that's something to watch for, and they've got a lot of really good guards that could make VCU pay.
What's your prediction?
I don't have an individual game prediction for all these games, but I do think in the next two road games, VCU's going to go 1-1.
Okay.
I don't see them... I think if they win both games, then it's going to be that found sneeze.
Yeah.
They will have found the sneeze.
Their season sneeze.
Their season sneeze. They will finally have sneezed. That's a good thing. But 1-1 is kind of what I expect. It's not out of the question for them to go 2. But that's going to really put their... That's when you start worrying about buys in Brooklyn for the A-10 tournament.
What do you think about... which one of these is... I mean, I don't want to say easier, but which one is a better matchup for VCU, Dayton or LaSalle?
It's tough to say. Both teams have really, really good guards. LaSalle, even though they had a worse start to the season, I think has been playing better basketball recently. I've tweeted about some about how they're that really annoying, pesky team who contributed nothing to the conference.
Yeah.
But now they're going to come beat a bunch of teams in the conference that are trying to get the NCAA tournament.
Yeah.
You know, and it's interesting because LaSalle beat VCU last year. Their best player, Ramon Galloway scored 31 points on VCU last year, and he's gone.
Yeah.
And he's a big reason that they went to the Sweet 16 last year. And they struggled with that at first, but it seems like they're really turning it on. They had really good guards to sort of fill the void that he left. So I think they go 1-1 in the next two games.
And LaSalle, go back to LaSalle for 1 second. LaSalle has a Virginia Tech transfer on it.
Yeah.
Tyrone Garland? Is that his first name? Tyrone something?
Yeah, Tyrone Garland.
So it seems like every couple of games, VCU plays a team with a Virginia Tech transfer on it.
Who's having a better career at the new school than Virginia Tech?
By far. Virginia Tech kicked it close against Notre Dame this week.
I was looking at...
Didn't turn out very well for Tech, but it was not unrespectable.
Well, who did Notre Dame was good, but they lost their best player. What's that guy's name? I don't know. They beat Indiana, and then they lose their best player, I think, in the next game after he drops 50 million points on Indiana. I mean, that's my prediction for the next two games.
Cool.
You were talking about this. You know, and Tim Perrell from the Richmond Times-Dispatch and I were talking about this the other night, but VCU's got a really, really tough road schedule.
Yep.
I mean, it's insane. You know, and I think, you know, there's some conspiracies as to why. Conspiracies, I mean, it's not bad things. But, I mean, VCU is one of those teams that's going to go to the NCAA tournament. And, like, people in the A-10 office know that. And so they, you know, if you got a team who's, like, going to go to the NCAA tournament, that's maybe on the bubble, you want to give them opportunities to prove themselves.
Yeah.
And so the A-10 with the scheduling definitely did this year. So they play, I'll say the KenPom ranking, the name of the team, and then on the road. So they play 52 Dayton on the road, 73 LaSalle on the road, 76 St. Joseph's on the road, 24 St. Louis on the road, 31 Massachusetts on the road, Fordham on the road. That's fortunately an easier game. And then they play 68 Richmond on the road.
Yeah.
Fordham is their easiest road game, and Fordham is... It's not last year's Fordham. I mean, they've got the A-10 Rookie of the Year. What's John Sevier's averaging 20 points per game?
Yeah.
And they already had what's his name? They had another really good guard. I don't know. That's the guy that bothered me for the rest of the time now.
That's not...
Brendan Fraser. How could I forget that?
How could you forget? yeah. It's going to make a bunch of... wasn't he the caveman?
He's in The Mummy. He's in... I don't know. I made a Photoshop picture of it last year. People didn't seem to like it. I think it's hilarious. That's because I grew up with The Mummy. I'm of that generation.
Yeah, seriously. And out of those, like, man, well, I guess, I mean, Like you said, it's a good and bad thing. Like, to steal some of these road wins, I think would be just massive. That Massachusetts game is going to be...
It's going to be brutal.
Incredible.
And the St. Louis game is going to be really... I mean, those are back-to-back games. I mean, they... Well, yeah. I mean, the whole schedule is hard because that's the nature of the A-10. But February 12th, they play George Washington at home. February 15th, they play St. Louis on the road. February 21st, they play UMass on the road.
Yeah.
That's a really... I mean, that's a stretch where, like, if they can go 3-0, I'm going to be jumping around in circles. If they go on 3, I'll be upset, but, like, I can understand how it would happen.
Yeah, so what is VCU... If VCU wins the games it's supposed to win, loses the games it's supposed to lose, let's, like, err more on the, like, loses more games. What is their... They're still going to win 20 games this year?
They've got 6 more than them. Yeah, because there's they can win... They're going to win 6 of the next 13, for sure.
Okay. And if we end up 20 and whatever, 21 and whatever, what does that mean for...
What do they need to get into the NCAA tournament?
Sure.
Depends upon the conference tournament. I mean, if they finish 10-6 in the conference and, like, lose in the first round of the conference tournament, you know, they'll be happy to be a home seed in the NIT.
Yeah.
An upper 4 seed in the NIT. But I think, I mean, part of it is they do. They've got the name recognition. They've got a proven track record in March. So they're going to get the benefit of the doubt on Selection Sunday.
Yeah.
But it is a little scary. I mean, there are some scenarios where you can imagine them dropping a couple games and not getting in.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of it depends. I mean, A-10 is either going to be the most ecstatic conference in the country on Selection Sunday or the most disappointed. Because, like, they're going to send, like, 3 teams for sure.
Yeah.
But then you could make the case that they should send, like, 6 teams.
Yeah.
Like, they're going to have a lot of teams, like, right there on the bubble, which is amazing considering the fact that they don't have Temple or Xavier or Butler this year. The fact that they could end up with 5 or 6 teams that have legitimate resumes to really get into the tournament. I mean, look, UMass had a great season last year, and they were right on the bubble. So I think they'll either be the most excited or most disappointed conference on Selection Sunday.
What do you think? This is a big tangent. What do you like? How do we feel about staying in the A-10? Like, right now, I feel pretty good about it. With the way everyone's playing, I think I still do think if a Big East invitation came, like, you jump at it, right? Or
yes, yeah. It'd be another step up. But I love the A-10. I'm happy with the A-10. I think it's a lot of really cool matchups. I like having Richmond in the conference.
Yeah.
But the real thing, the reason that I think about the Big East regularly, the reason that I get concerned about that is because there's a chance Dayton and St. Louis could leave. And if Dayton and St. Louis leave the A-10, then it's a lot less of it's not a great position, especially because I think St. Louis VCU could end up being a pretty cool rivalry.
Yeah, I agree. I like that they're very different in style,
entirely
in,
different
in type, like not demographics, I guess, but like VCU is a very one way type of place, you know, mm-hmm. and like it's a cool matchup, I think.
And you know, Shaka is this young big name coach who played Division 3. Jim Cruz is kind of this guy who's on his second or third chance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was a pretty big name player for Indiana. You know, you know coming from a big school like that. You know, so you got the old second chance guy from D1 versus the young hotshot who played basketball at Kenyon College. So it's interesting, and they're both very very likable and skilled coaches.
And we got that the CBI. Pre-A-10 CBI matchup is cool.
Taking them into and that, yeah. I like it. I like it a lot.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see what happens. I hate conference realignment. It's like my least favorite thing, but it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, conference realignment's fascinating. Because everyone's trying to, you know, save their own butt.
Yep.
And sometimes you get so caught up in that, well, it's just a lot of game theory. It's like...
Yeah. Totally.
If everyone came together and like colluded and had like did what was best for everyone, it would work out well. But everyone's like gonna do whatever they think is gonna benefit them the most, regardless of what other people do.
Yeah, I'm trying to get those Big East television dollars, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a tangent. Let's see. I had one other thing while we're kind of talking about conferences. If Richmond plays UMass Wednesday.
Oh, yeah.
Tomorrow, I think. depending on when you're listening, I guess tomorrow could be today. Wednesday, so Richmond plays UMass on Wednesday. UMass is currently ranked, I think, 13. Is that right? And if 12 in the coaches poll, 13 in the AP poll.
I only do AP poll.
Okay, so 13 in the AP poll. We don't even pretend that that's nice. By the way, we talked about last week, also receiving votes. George Washington is receiving eight votes in the AP. So
yeah, well, they, you know, that's pretty good because they did lose to. Well, I guess it's been a minute since they've lost to LaSalle.
Yeah. Anyway, so if Richmond beats UMass, it's at Richmond. If Richmond beats UMass, are they the second best team in the Commonwealth after UVA?
I mean, if VCU loses, absolutely. VCU wins, I don't know. That's why there's a whole poll and not just me picking.
Right.
I don't know. I mean, yeah. I'd probably vote even if VCU wins. If Richmond beats UMass tomorrow, yeah, I'll probably vote them second.
Yeah. I mean, I'm excited. I don't think that they will win. I think Richmond is still missing a couple pieces. Or maybe they have the pieces. The pieces that haven't fit together yet. There's flashes, though, man. They played well against Dayton.
I heard this stat. Alonzo Nelson-Adota is top 10 in blocks there.
Yes.
And he's only played 50 games. And every single other person on that list has played more than 100.
That's crazy.
That's crazy, like, in the modern era. Because, you know, with those gaudy blocks and rebounds numbers, most of those are from, you know, prior to the three-point line,
yeah.
60s and 70s types guy. That's really impressive. But they're not as good on offense as they have been in the past.
They have one or two guys.
Well, Cedric Lindsay is the second leading scorer in the conference right now.
Yep. And he's kind of the guy. Terry Allen, like, will get it going a little bit. And
they miss brothers.
Yeah.
Just like VCU. I think at the end of the season last year I went, Richmond's going to be fine without brothers, VCU's going to be fine without Daniels. Don't feel quite so confident about that statement anymore.
So tomorrow is a cool day for basketball in Richmond. Lots going on. Worth watching. The VCU game will be on CBS Sportsnet, I think.
So.
And the UMass game is on something. It might be on CBS 6.3. But that game is definitely on TV somewhere. So you can watch them both, like, picture-in-picture. I guess that's not a thing, picture-in-picture anymore. That's probably... Do people do that now? I don't know. People probably just have two giant TVs
yeah,
now.
Yeah, exactly.
How you do that. That's what picture-in-picture is now. Picture beside a picture.
Yeah. Well, they used to make it so you got to chop off part of the screen or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Who's trying to do that?
Who's trying to do that?
That's all I had. I'm excited for tomorrow, and hopefully everyone will be happy tomorrow.
Yeah, well, hopefully everyone's warm, and hopefully you get lots of snow, but everyone's safe.
Yeah, I hope the team's already out of here. I'm sure they are. I'm sure they're, like, on their way to Dayton. Would hate for them to get trapped in the... What, is it even going to snow here? I mean, it's probably going to be, like, 2 inches. We'll be fine.
Yeah, maybe. Well, hey, it's supposed to be 11 degrees tonight, and so, you know...
Stay warm.
When Robin Randenberg scores 11 points, VCU always wins, so when it hits 11 degrees... Degrees. Richmonders always win, so...
Well, when it hits 11 degrees, I wear 11 coats. That's what that means. All right, I think that's all I had. You got anything else over there?
That's great. That's quite a number of tangents, but...
Yeah. Let's do... So, if you guys need to contact us, you can email rams@rbnews.com. If you like the emailing, you can send us feedback and hate mail and stuff. If you are the Twittering type, we're all over Twitter. I'm at Ross Catrow, RossCatrow.
The Rams podcast is at RVA Ram News. My name's Aaron Williams, and you can follow me at AW Underground.
And you can always, if you're super into Virginia basketball, you can follow the Commonwealth Power Rankings, which is at VA Power Rankings. So contact us. There's lots of ways to contact us. A special prize for someone who contacts us through all the different ways. I think that's it. So let's go Rams.
Go Rams. Martin had a dream. Kendrick have a dream.